Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm Executive Director for Christian Home Educators of Colorado, but also a pastor and a father of five. Concerned about the breakdown of a lot of things, faith, family, freedom, even academics, has been in free fall here for the last, generation or two in this country. The literacy of college graduates has dropped 10% in the last 10 years, according to a recent federally funded study. That's right. The average college graduate is less literate than he was 10 years ago. By a long shot, only 42% of college graduates can read a short piece of prose and then tell you what it means. Also, according to Chris Hedges from Truthdig, there are over 42 million American adults, 20% of whom hold high school diplomas, who can't read, as well as 50 million who read at a fourth or fifth grade level, which is hardly anything at all. So 92 million Americans, adults, cannot read worth anything. Nearly a third of the nation's population is illiterate or barely literate, and their numbers are growing by an estimated 2 million per year. But even those who are supposedly literate retreat in huge numbers, says Chris, into this image-based existence, meaning they don't buy books, they don't read anything. Also, Suzanne Richardson recently blogged, a third of high school graduates, along with 42% of college graduates, never read a book after they finish school. So there you go. Almost half of college graduates never read a book after they finish school. 80% of the families in the United States last year did not buy a book. 80% didn't buy a book. I bought two books yesterday. All right. And then the day before that, I bought about 48 books. I had to buy a new bookshelf. We installed a new bookshelf yesterday. Well, that's what we do here in our family. We read. We read and read and read and read and read. We read all day long. Yesterday, I think I read 50 pages, 20 or 30 to my own children out loud. But folks, more importantly, we got to be reading. We got to be writing. In order to engage the battle for what's right, somebody once said the pen is mightier than the sword, for good or for ill. I'm reading a neat little book right now called 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 That Didn't Help. Of course, referring to Karl Marx, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Machiavelli, and all the other evil men who used the power of the pen to accomplish the most unbelievably evil things you could ever, ever imagine. But the same thing happens for that, which is good. I mean, we could raise some writers who really believe in a biblical worldview. They understand the Ten Commandments and a biblical view of what is right and what is wrong, and they've got that sense of absoluteness established by God himself, and they're willing to stand on that ethic and that truth and write some powerful things that could impact the world. Hey, think about Lex Rex. Samuel Rutherford's books, Lex Rex, really was the beginning of the concept of liberty that established this nation in the 1600s and 1700s. You also have great books like Augustine's City of God, Institutes of the Christian Religion, Imitation of Christ. These books have been phenomenal in their outreach, in their ability to establish Christian cultures, Christian economies, Christian political situations. We need good writers, folks. We need to raise good writers. Good script writers, poets, historians, those who take a biblical worldview and then incarnate it into the expressions of life. That's what we need. So in a moment, I'm going to talk about raising good writers. And Frode Jensen, from Jensen's Grammar, Jensen's Punctuation, Format Writing, the guy who's behind a lot of the homeschool curriculum in the area of writing. Frode Jensen is next on Generation. Stay with me. This is Kevin Swanson.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Welcome back to the Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson. With me now, Frode Jensen from Jensen's Grammar fame. He's written a number of books for teaching writing and grammar to children in the homeschool environment. And Frode, you've been busy doing this for a long time. You've been in this business for a while.
Well, I wrote my first grammar back in the 60s when I was in graduate school, but I did not actually publish anything until 1992.
Okay. But your books are very popular among homeschoolers. What do you attribute that to?
That's very difficult. I get a lot of unsolicited testimonials. I believe it's because they're clear, and they teach things that are necessary, and people have success with them.
Yeah. Now, you know, you take an average, email today, okay, your average letter that the average person writes in 2009. Now, compare that to the average letter written in 1820.
Well,
you
there
see
is
any
no
difference.
Comparison.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference, of course, is the we today are very short-focused. Our sentences are very clipped and short. We're very direct. It's sort of the TV mentality where you just get, you know, little quick shots, bang, 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 whereas the thoughts were very well developed in those older letters. You would find sentences that would go on, you know, for lines and still make good sense. It's kind of like reading Paul in the New Testament.
Yeah. Were they better thinkers back then? Could they think better than we can think?
I wouldn't say that. I think their manner of thinking was different, and they were schooled in it, but they didn't have near the visual imagery that we're impacted with, such as television and all of those things.
Right. And I think I just quoted Chris Hedges, who said people who have been to college are retreating into an image-based existence upon graduation. So, you know, a lot of people graduating from college aren't even reading anymore. They're just the image-based system is what they're drawn to. And yet that doesn't really develop the mind very well, does it?
I don't think so. You know, Stan Freberg years ago in a little pitch for radio, had a little girl on, and she said, well, doesn't television stretch the imagination? And he said, well, yeah, up to 21 inches.
It tells you, it fills in all the blanks for you. It doesn't go deep enough. It fills in all the blanks, doesn't leave much for the imagination. Whereas when you're reading a book, Your mind has to fill in the picture for you.
Exactly. It's very similar to radio versus television. You know, I can remember listening to The Lone Ranger as a kid. When I saw him on TV, I was flatly disappointed.
Yeah. Because you had constructed more in your imagination.
Exactly.
At
least something different than, you know, what it turned out to be.
Yeah. And yet, communication is important. You know, you read the Word of God, and you find God wants us reading, Deuteronomy 6:7, read this word to your children, teach it to your children, and then write it on the walls of your home. Reading and writing is important in a biblical way of thinking. Communication is important. I think the book of Proverbs talks about the power of the tongue and the power of communication for good or for ill. And so it is important. We ought to be raising good communicators.
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that communication is a skill that can be learned by really anyone. Unfortunately, writing is work, and most teachers and students today are really not in favor of doing a lot of work. And in order for the student to learn how to write, they've got to write, and somebody's got to read it, and those people who are reading it need to be able to give good instruction and critique of what has been written. And, you know, all of that boils down to, wow, this just takes hordes of time. You know, I had my students when I was teaching in the public school, they were writing for me paragraphs every day from when we started until in September until Thanksgiving, and then we wrote every other day until the end of the first semester. And when I had my college prep writing class, the students were turning in a 1,500-word paper typed with documentation every 10 calendar days.
You know, Frody, I think that is the secret. You've got to be writing every day. Every day. And that may have been why some of these guys in the 1800s were such good writers. They just wrote constantly. One of the things that really impacted me was reading about Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan would keep a pad of paper with him all the time and would be writing letters, handwritten letters, almost all the time. And that really impacted me. I decided from that point on that I would write every day. And that has helped me. I tell you what, though, I'm not a good writer yet. I'm better than I was 10 years ago.
I'll agree to that.
And, yeah, but I still look at my writing and think, boy, that really stinks. And the more I read of others, the more I look at my own writing and say, wow, boy, I really lack in how I'm writing. But it's still something I think is important, and I continue to do.
Well, I would say there's a caveat here, Kevin, and that's that if you continue to write without instruction, you end up practicing your mistakes.
Mm-hmm. So you need instruction. You need somebody to
you
be teaching
absolutely, you.
You
need instruction. And you see, it's very simple to instruct a writer. Now, I'm gonna make a couple of statements here. First of all, that, you know, there's a lot of talk about creative writing and so on and so forth. Well, actually, all writing is creative that's not just copying.
Okay.
So the kid that writes an expository essay, for instance, he has to create the sentences. He has to pull the information together. He has to do all that himself. It is creative writing, not in the sense of writing a novel or poetry or a short story or some of those kind of things, which is where, you know, we really go for creative writing when we talk about it. But the act of writing is a creative act, and, you know, we're God's creatures, and so therefore we're fit in His image, and here we go. But you see, God is a God of order. God has laid out patterns in this world. We see it in the climate. We see it in habits that we have. We see it all over. And so over the years, I decided, you know, let's look for the patterns in the language. And I certainly found a lot of them. And that's, of course, what I based my grammar on. And then stumbled onto some material years ago, back in the 70s, actually, about ways in which we think. And this fellow identified seven different ways in which we formulate arguments. Those are the seven formats that I use teaching in my format writing book.
Okay. Okay. Give us some examples.
Well, you have, we think by example. We want to talk to somebody and we want to, you know, impress them that this is a good deal. So we give them five examples, or we do a compare and contrast, or we do a process, or we do a definition, or we do an analogy.
Right.
All of those are ways in which we outline an argument.
Okay, okay. And it's not that difficult, but it's a combination. It's kind of a combination between being a technician and a creative artist, isn't it? I mean, there's some techno aspects, but you have to be creative as well.
Yeah, you have the art, and then you have the science. You see, there's four parts of writing.
Mm-hmm.
There's the content, which is controlled by the writer because he's been given a subject or he has a subject in mind he wants to write about. So that's unique with every piece. There's the mechanics. That has to be taught, and that has to flow. That's, you know, the spelling, the punctuation, the usage, and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a lot of mechanical errors, it disrupts the writing, and it makes it, you know, an unhappy event to read, if you will. But if you have good mechanics and so forth, why then, you know, it reads well, or it reads better anyway. You can be technically perfect and a lousy writer.
Yeah.
Then you have style, and that's not something you really teach. That's just something that sort of grows out of a person. And I've found that students, if they're reading a particular author, begin to write in that author's style, and then they read a new author, and they get hooked on them, and they kind of switch, you know, and that's fine.
But isn't style driven somewhat by your own personality?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But you see, the fourth element is the element that's rarely taught, and that's what my format writing book deals with primarily, and that's organization. And those principles can be learned by anyone,
mm-hmm.
but they have to be laid out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something, you know, let's face it, I'm unique in the sense that I sit around and I think about language. Come on, you know, who do I get to talk to? And so, because of that, you know, doing a lot of thinking about it, you begin to come to some conclusions, and those conclusions then move your thinking in a given way, and then you begin to formalize things, and pretty soon you have a system.
Yeah. What is your thought about copying good writers? And I know some people say, you know, just start out by copying. Is that a good way to learn how to write?
Well, I don't know. I've never given that much thought. I've used a variant on that, and that is dictation.
Okay.
And I would give a lot of my seventh graders dictation, and the reason there was just to get them to write something. And then, of course, I would also be able to check their spelling and their punctuation in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm. What makes for powerful writing? Just very, very influential writing. Does it have to do with convictions, commitment to certain ideals, passion, emotion? What do you think it is that really produces, takes that writing to that level that really communicates?
Well, I think clarity is the greatest. If you're not clear,
yeah,
then people don't know what you're talking about. Now, if you're clear in what you say, then they can either agree or disagree. Certainly the passion, the style, the use of words and all those kind of things fit in there. You have people who are very good communicators. I remember Don Marquis saying in one of his poems, he's the fellow that wrote the Archie and Mehitabel series, very interesting material. But he said, you know, there's some people who come in and tell you that the earth is splitting apart and giant rocks are falling from the sky and it's boring. And there are others who can tell you they just bought a box of pink Kleenex and you're on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
And he's right. You know, there are those people who have that ability to say things in such a manner as to really grip others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it has to do with a lot of things, the kinds of words they choose, the kind of vocabulary they bring out, the kind of flow, and all of those things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of this has to do with interest and talent and gifting as well. You don't expect every single person who ever goes through your classrooms, your homeschool classrooms or private school classrooms or public school classrooms to turn into great writers. I mean, not everybody's going to be a writer. They're not called to that. Yet what do you expect for your average child working his way through K-12?
My expectation would be that they could, on command, produce some intelligible comment about a particular subject if they were asked and they had a little time to gather the information and put it together.
Okay. Well, what are the most common mistakes that people make in writing?
Well, one, they're not clear thinkers.
Yeah.
And if they're not, you know, let's put it this way. If you see a picture or if you see something in the fog and it's indistinct, how can you describe it?
Yeah.
You can't describe it with clarity.
So put your pen down. If you can't think clearly concerning the concept you're trying to communicate, put the pen down and think about it a little bit more.
Right. You see, if I have a very clear picture in my mind, there's a better opportunity for me to get that picture across to you than if I have a fuzzy picture. Now, I may not be able to get, even though I have a clear picture, I may not be able to get you a clear picture. I may be fuzzy in my expression. But if I've got a clear picture, I've got a whole lot better shot at it than if I have a fuzzy picture myself.
Yeah.
So, you know, good thinking is primary to good writing, or at least communicative writing.
What about grammar, punctuation?
Those are basic tools. You start out, there's a hierarchy in the English language just like there is in math. Most people don't recognize it, but it's there. And, you know, you can go all the way down to the phonemes and the graphemes. And but I'll just start with words, and you take words and you put them into phrases. You put phrases into sentences, which are units of thought. You take those sentences and you organize them into coherent, paragraphs, if you will, and then you take paragraphs and you organize them into essays, and that's just how it's done.
You know, I'm wondering if people are just less coherent at points. They don't think clearly, and so the end result is the way they write tends to be just fairly shallow, maybe just general ideas and concepts communicated there, but nothing much in terms of depth.
I think that's a possible, scenario. I think a lot of people maybe if they're very passionate about something, haven't really thought it through, they're just emotional,
mm-hmm.
and you get a lot of emoting.
Yeah.
You see that in certain writing.
Yeah.
Others, you know, it's just casual, and so they just think, you know, well, I'll just put this down. It's scattered thinking.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, this idea that you should just write like you talk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine if you're a good thinker, you know, but a lot of us, the best writing is rewriting. You know, I heard that all the time growing up.
And yeah.
You got to work on it. I mean, if you want to really get a good piece, you got to craft it. You know, I'll write an article for my newsletter and then let it sit there for a few days and go back. And I generally am revising, you know, a third of it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what are your favorite writers? You know, you do a lot of reading. I pick that up from your newsletters.
Yes, I do a lot of reading, and I have, you know, two kinds of things that I read. Mm-hmm. I read just for the fun of it. And, you know, I believe that that God gave me the opportunity to be recreative, you know, to be recreated, and I just like to read a good Western or a good science fiction story or a fantasy story. I get a boot out of them. Now, some of those writers actually have some things to say. But they're tidbits, you know. It's not where you go for philosophy of life and all that sort of stuff. And then I have a lot of other areas that I like to read in, theology and economics and history. And you know, I don't have a particular favorite writer. I did have a writer that I really enjoyed when I was young, and that was Kenneth Roberts. And he was very, very popular, an old librarian turned me on to him, and I learned a bag of history from him. And he was translated back in the World War II into 40 different languages.
Wow.
Probably not really well known.
Yeah.
Excellent writing.
What did he write on?
Mostly American history.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
He has, you know, I will never forget, I read one of his books that was from the Tory point of view on the War of American Independence, and I finished it on the 4th of July, and it was not a pleasant 4th.
Yeah. Well, you know,
but his other books were so good, you know, Lydia Bailey and just a variety of books. I've still got them.
What do you think of G.A. Henty? Because he's written a lot of those historical novels as well.
I like Henty. I've read probably 20 of his books and so forth. He's a little preachy sometimes, but I enjoy it. You know, you can tell where he's coming from, and it's so beautiful because that's who he is. If, you know, if you're beyond the Reformation, he's certainly not a Catholic. If you're back before Christian times, he's you know, it's just interesting to see how he narrows as he goes along, you know, until he becomes thoroughly English. Depending upon how far back you go.
Uh-huh. What do you think of McAuliffe and his recent books, John Adams, Truman? Have you read any of his stuff?
I've read John Adams and I read 1776.
Okay.
I was very impressed with John Adams. I was not as impressed with 1776.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have not read Truman.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what impressed me about John Adams was the man.
Yes.
Adams.
Yes.
What an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you find out that they've got 6 miles of microfilm, that's the corpus of the writing that they did for 3 generations, that's awesome.
Yeah. These guys wrote and wrote and wrote. Just an amazing thing. And, of course, letter writing was a huge part of what they did. And that's one of the things I think we need to recover, Frody, in our age. We need to be writing letters. I mean, not just emails with emoticons. I'm talking about letters, preferably handwritten at points, because it makes it just a little bit more personal.
Well, I agree to that. But, you know, with the texting that's going on, that's the rage. You know, I've got grandkids, and they're just sitting there pecking this stuff out all the time. And most of it is not even sentences, and it's all this, you know, be for you,
yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking, hello. But that's, it's hard to fight the age.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But I think as we begin to write more, we're going to find more pleasure in it, and it's going to become hopefully an art form that is recovered in the next generation or two. And that's my commitment. I know it's yours, too.
Well, that's a possibility. You know, I think the one thing where we do see people write is when you get the annual Christmas letter.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We're seeing more and more of that. I think we had a four-pager we had to take down to about 2 pages this year. We had our daughter Emily write our Christmas letter, and she got a little carried away with it.
Well, she's a writer.
She is.
You know, some people just have the knack. Some people can play basketball well with, you know, little coaching. Well, some people can write very well, but most of us are not going to be great writers. We're not going to produce the great American novel or the poem that knocks everybody dead or the hymn that everybody's going to sing. You know, but we can learn to communicate clearly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you very much, Frody, for sharing some of your wisdom with us. And I'd like to direct people to your website, jsgrammar.com. And you produce a very neat little monthly newsletter.
Quarterly.
But I enjoy your quarterly newsletter, and I'd recommend that to folks as well. It's up there at jsgrammar.com. Thanks, Frody, for joining us today on Generations.
Hey, thank you.
Folks, that website one more time for Frody Jensen is jsgrammar.com. You have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. We cover all sorts of issues on this program, including writing and homeschooling, and culture, worldview, and family issues and relationships. And I hope you've been benefited by today's broadcast. You can interact with this radio program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.
Reformation Church is sponsoring Generations Radio because we have a passion for renewing truth and relationships in a lost and lonely world. In this nation, we find the family disintegrating, morality is on the decline, the culture is embracing nihilism and existentialism, and yet church attendance remains as high as ever. Is the humanist culture impacting the church, or is the church impacting a humanist culture? At Reformation Church, we want to see the church make an impact on culture. That's why we encourage churches everywhere to bring a biblical worldview and a biblical view of ethics back to this culture. As pastors preach the Word of God, Christians everywhere should be taking Old and New Testament and applying it to politics, economics, education, art, and culture. And one more thing, we also want to see relationships renewed. Instead of fragmenting the family by the way we structure our church education and family life, let's reintegrate the family. Let's put a value on church relationships by engaging in hospitality. And let's reintegrate the family by building up relationships within the family. This is our vision at Reformation Church in Castle Rock, Colorado, and for hundreds of other churches throughout Colorado. Visit our website at www.reformationchurch.com.